Proudly presented by the U.S. Army, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 99-year-old Bill Kendall of Henderson, Nevada. After World War II, Bill enjoyed a long career in the broadcast industry, starting out as an engineer at a radio station in Santa Maria, California, where they happen to be listening right now on our affiliate KSMA. He would later become an editor and camera operator in Tinseltown, working on everything from NFL football broadcasts to shows like All in the Family, The Smothers Brothers, Sonny and Cher, Hee Haw, and others you'd remember. But those opportunities never would have materialized if the Boston native hadn't survived some pretty precarious positions with the 2nd Naval Beach Battalion in World War II. In a bit, we're going to hear what he experienced on June 6, 1944, but when we left off, he had described some unexpected challenges in the initial landings at Sicily in July of 1943. First, the landing craft he was in was swinging wildly on the side of the ship, finally released into a 10-foot drop to the surf below, the impact of which would damage the ramp. And when they couldn't lower that, the skinny 23-year-old finally squeezed through a narrow opening, only to get his foot stuck in that aperture. Eventually, after all of that, he made it ashore. And so, if you're part of that beach battalion and you go in during the initial assault, you set up the beach, you make sure the radio communication is active. How long do you stay there?
Well, I was there for about 3 days. And then I was ordered to aboard a destroyer, and they took me from that location up to Palermo. Apparently, the Army was having trouble finding operators, so they ordered me aboard the Mayran destroyer. They delivered me in Palermo.
So what'd you do in Palermo?
I went right into work in the radio shack.
Why was that so important? Why was it so crucial that they have someone like you there?
Well, apparently, they didn't have anybody in the Army to fill in. They needed somebody right away. So I was just assigned to go, and there's another fellow with me, we both were. And the one thing about that trip was the executive officer on the ship was Franklin Delano Roosevelt Jr. He interviewed us as well, because we were Navy guys, but we looked like we were in the Army. We had a lot of Army, I had coveralls, for example.
Well, I'm just guessing that had to be a big deal for you. I mean, here, this is the president's son.
Later at the UN, I worked with his mother, Eleanor.
And just so we understand, when you say they needed you in Palermo to run the radio shack, does that mean you have to pay attention to the messages that are being transmitted, or you just have to keep the equipment operational?
Well, it sits down and took messages back and forth, and then they shipped me to a little town about 20 miles east of there, a little town of Terminator Merce, and we set up radio station there and got everything going in that area.
And I know you're not looking to pat yourself on the back, but have you ever thought about how things would be different if those radio communications weren't established?
I don't know. You don't think about those things. You take every day as what's happening. You do your job, and that's about all you can do. As an individual, you're in with a group of other people, so you're no hero. You're no star or anything. You're just one of the guys.
Well, and there were so many guys and so many units, and this is such a massive effort. Communication is pretty crucial, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I think you did a pretty important job.
Well, I think it was important at the time, yeah.
So when did you go back to England?
Well, we went from Sicily back to North Africa. They loaded us aboard the LSTs, and we traveled to England and were attacked by German planes on the way there. They were testing there. Apparently, they dropped a bomb with wings on it, radio controlled. And I think they were experimenting, because they didn't drop any bombs on any of the ships. I think there was only about 3 planes coming over. But they put a little fear in us.
These are those glide bombs, right?
They're glide bombs, yeah. So I think that was experimental at the time. Because they didn't really put attackers like they normally would on a convoy.
So did you actually see those glide bombs?
Yes, I saw one go and landed right beside a Corvette, an English Corvette. And it just about turned the boat completely over. And I talked to some of the guys who were aboard after we got to England, and they were telling about how the ship was flipped over.
Well, that had to be a little hair-raising to see that.
Well, it was. But things was, when things are happening, you just kind of go along with what's happening. You don't really think so much about the hazards of it, because it's just kind of hanging in there, that's all. You know, I was one of the guys. We had a lot of 90 people in my beach battalion.
How well did you get to know those guys?
I wound up with three other fellows who were lifelong friends. And I knew a lot of the other fellows, too. But there were three that were very close together. But they all passed away.
So you go back to England. When did you start to hear rumblings that you guys might be crossing the channel?
Well, we really didn't know. We were told that we were going to be going across the channel at the time. They just dropped us off in England. We landed and they put us in the hotels. It was Thanksgiving Day. We arrived, so it was kind of cold area. So we wound up in these summer cottages in southwest England. And that was a chance that I took my first bath of the year. I think I lived in those coveralls for 4 or 5 straight months. I must have smelled pretty good.
I'm sure you did, and that bath must have been something to be thankful for on Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
Are Americans allowed to celebrate Thanksgiving in England?
Well, we arrived on Thanksgiving Day. The cook on the LS team came up with turkey and our dressing, so it was on board the ship that we had our Thanksgiving. We had a dinner that was really quite wonderful. And then they sent us to the little town of Foy, England, which is southwest England. And like I say, they put us in hotels. And that was pretty handy. It's quite an exchange from living in pup tents.
Big upgrade. And I'm just curious. I don't want to put words in your mouth or thoughts in your head. But you've had a lot of Thanksgiving since then, since 1943.
Yes.
How often do you think about that unique Thanksgiving?
Well, Thanksgiving really wasn't that much. At home, it was a big deal. But on the Sicily landing, they gave us the turkey dinner on the night before our landing. So that was the closest thing to Thanksgiving. In the States, when we had Thanksgiving, we were invited to families in the area that would serve us. But Thanksgiving was a big deal.
When they gave you that big dinner the night before Sicily, did that seem like a last meal to you?
I think so. That was part of something that came into your mind. Yeah, I think so.
And I guess the reality is there were those that was their last meal.
It was their last meal, yeah. We didn't lose too many because Sicily turned out to be a fairly easy landing. We went through a lot of armament against us for the first maybe 2 hours of the landing. But once that was over, the only problem we had was the German ships coming, the aircraft coming in and dropping bombs. That was about the only difference.
So you had quite a while in England before the Normandy landings.
Yes. Well, all the way from Thanksgiving to June 6th.
So what'd you do all that time?
Well, we trained, and then I worked in a radio in a communication station for a couple of months. We did, I think, 3 or 4 take us out to the ships and would land. There was one place called Slappin' Sands. That was where we landed a couple of times and that was one of the times when the Germans attacked the group, when the army guys had jumped off their vessel, their helmets, as they hit the water, broke their neck. So there was 15 to 20 bodies discovered that that happened. So Slapton Sands was kind of a big thing for the Navy guys.
And this was all kept secret at the time. This was Exercise Tiger, they called it. And the Germans showed up in their E-boats and killed a bunch of guys. And you were there for that one?
I was on the beach already when that happened. I could hear the noise out at sea, but we really didn't know what was happening. So that was kind of, they cut us short. The next day we loaded on board. Trucks went back to our base. So we really didn't spend too much time in training on that particular beach.
What was that like to find out that so many Americans had been killed there in a practice?
It was very devastating because a lot of those guys were from the area we were in. We didn't know them personally or anything, but we trained with a lot of those people on the ground before they go on the boat.
Maybe this is hard to remember, but did that change the way you felt about your own security?
I think so, yeah. Well, we knew that you didn't use a chin strap. That was bad. That's when that all happened. So that was about the only thing that I remember about how we felt. That just became a common new thing to do, that you didn't use a chin strap.
Yeah, it's a tough way to learn a lesson like that. What's the first thing you remember about D-Day or finding out that you guys were going to go, that it was time and you're heading across the channel?
Well, they put us in a bivouac area, and when it was time to load, they put us on trucks and brought us down to the LCT. And that was on the 4th, I think, because we were supposed to land on the 5th. I know we took off and traveled along the coast of England in a rainstorm. And daylight came. I realized we were still in England because we'd already returned to the base that we had left. And we couldn't think, what's going on? So I guess we were there in port for about 2 or 3 hours, and we took off for France. And I was in a group of, we were 3 abreast of LCTs. When I look back, we're number 1 on the list. And as we cross the horizon, you can see the convoy going all the way back. So there must have been like 1,000, maybe 400 or 500 LSTs. So it was an enormous operation.
Had you ever seen anything like that before?
Not really. The biggest thing was, as we were approaching France, the aircraft started fly over all the bombers. It was like a sideshow almost. You could see all these planes flying over and dropping paratroopers. And that was quite an experience to see these thousands of airplanes from all different sizes. And then as we were pulling in, it continued. It was a continuation of planes going to France.
What time did you land at Utah Beach that day?
Well, the ship I was on was apparently one of the older boats that they sent over, so we were sinking from almost the time we left England. I was in water over my ankles most of the time. We started to sink, and the salvage boat came up beside us. They ordered us off the thing and out of the salvage boat. I got on there, and one of the sailors was helping, said, "Can I help you?" And I handed him my carbine. And as I climbed up, he disappeared with my rifle. And I was furious. I wanted to grab, I would have killed him if I caught him. But they pushed me off to the side, and there was a boat waiting for us to the sides. So we got on, we had to get on that, and we headed into shore. And activity started to pick up. Dive bombers were coming in, and you could see the, on shore, you could see the debris flying through the air. Kind of an exciting time.
Well, it sounds pretty insane, and you described that so matter-of-factly, but what you were just saying was the LCT that you left England on was sinking as it went across the channel. And yeah, you said that like that
it
didn't bother you.
You couldn't get out of the line because the number one boat, and you're coming through mine areas. We're following mine detected ships on the way over. So you couldn't leave the convoy. So by the time we got into the right there, we pulled out a line, and that's when all of them finally decided they better get it off the ship.
So you're landing at Utah Beach, and you don't have your rifle anymore because the other guy took it. What were you carrying?
Well, I just got a short. He made some of the guys, and there were a couple of rifles laying around, so I picked up one. And we were pretty lucky. Wasn't a lot of activity on our particular beach. You know, Omaha was a bad beach. I was on Utah Beach, and that was fairly calm, actually.
And we'll explore that a little more when we come back. D-Day survivor Bill Kendall, 99 years old, is our guest today. And Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.